tree in there and says, and it can only deal with so much of this, but it doesn't store very much additional power. Mm-hmm. And so if it drops down to like 70, it'll make the necessary adjustments and make the output somewhere near the nominal range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now, how much does one of those cost? How much do you need to spend to get a device that will actually make up for not enough voltage?
Yeah. I think those start in the $50 to $60 range. I'd have to go look and see what the bottom end of those are. You run into those more with stereo systems, but you could use one on your computer. Because the computer, when you drop the voltage, it has to store more electricity than it's designed for to keep... Mm-hmm. to convert the AC to the DC so it keeps it nice and flat. Mm-hmm. And so if the voltage drops too low, it sends the wrong voltage into the computer as well. It can't internally regulate that. So an AVR would be an additional regulation of the voltage.
Now, is that a different device than a battery backup?
So a lot of... So there's four kinds of battery backups. You have standby battery backups, which are kind of which are a slower... type. They're sitting there waiting to click on, and it may take a few gyrations of the sinusoidal wave for them to kick in.
Yeah, so they're sitting there kind of watching what's coming out of the wall, soon as that gets too weird, it's like, okay, we're taking over.
And that's going to be a little slower than the line interactive ones, which is a large majority of the ones you find now. And so the line interactive ones usually have about a 4 millisecond connection time, which makes it about, I think it's like a quarter of a wave. So if it misses a quarter of a wave of the standard sine wave, it goes, okay, something's wrong with the voltage. I'm going to kick in and the equipment's basically none the wiser. Mm-hmm. There's some other things that you need to consider. Then there's sine wave, which is what comes into the, comes out of the wall socket normally. Mm-hmm. Simulated sine wave, or wait, is it? No, it's modified sine wave.
Would that be SSW? I'm just kidding. Sorry.
Okay.
It sounds like a good acronym.
I like that, SSW. Yeah.
So it comes in, for example, it would step to like 30 volts, then 60 volts, and it does what a DAC does for audio, where it cuts it up in different steps up and down the voltage. So it's not nice and clean like you're expecting. That's a little hard on some of the... power supplies and some of the components in there don't like that waveform, so it will wear them out a little quicker. So that's something to consider when you're buying a new.
Got it.
Okay. It looks to me like a lot of the new ones, pretty much all of them, send out pure sine
wave. Okay.
And so it's a little less efficient, but it's not going to tear up your equipment as bad.
Okay.
And almost everything that they sell, at a big box store and up. Mm-hmm. You don't see the modified sine wave very much anymore, except for in certain conditions.
Got it. So I guess we should tell our listeners that if they're having problems with simulated sine waves, they should call 970-963-2976.
Yeah.
And we will try to talk you down off the ledge on that.
So if you have your if you have your stereo plugged into your UPS and when the power goes out, it makes a little a clicking noise, that probably means that you have an older modified sine wave.
Okay.
UPS attached to it.
And how long do most of these UPSs have battery life?
That's rated in, so they'll tell you like 50% load. A cheap one kind of starts around the 250 or 300 watt range. So it'll put out 250 or 300 watts for maybe 4 to 9 minutes, depending on battery capacity. Mm-hmm. And then obviously as...
If you have less load on it, it'll last a little bit longer.
Right.
And vice versa. If you load it up completely with a bunch of, big power hog devices, you get 2 minutes. So, we got an Amber Alert, huh?
Yep.
Or no, is that?
Yeah, that's an Amber Alert.
Is it? Okay. Mm-hmm. Nice.
So basically, it just gives you time to power down your big workstations.
Right. So you got, So usually what I do is most of my clients have dual monitors now. So I'll plug in the primary monitor and the and then any peripherals that require power. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's two or three items plugged in. That usually puts it under 100 watts. So you have maybe 15 minutes of work time before you have to shut the computer off and do everything.
Yep. I have a really good tip that might help some people. So hopefully all you people out there that need helping are listening. Battery backups generally have two sides to them. And one of them is labeled surge suppressor only.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they don't even use the word only, do they? But it says surge suppressor.
The older one says surge. The older ones say surge only.
Surge only. Okay. And the other side says battery backup.
It'll say battery and surge.
They're not just the thing isn't just bragging about all the different things that it does. It's telling you that those outlets along that one side only do that.
Right.
So the ones along the other side do both that and the battery backup part, you know.
So you plug in your secondary devices to the surge only,
mm-hmm.
and you plug in your primary devices like the tower and your primary monitor to the surge mm-hmm. part of it, so you can at least save your work and shut down while you're waiting for the power to come back.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll never forget, I came home one night in the middle of a brownout. Like everything in my house was,
like
all the light bulbs are at half, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I came down and I smelled this horrible smell, and it was my VCR. And so, you know, I just wanted to ask kind of in retrospect, you know, so apparently a fairly large amount of smoke escaped from my VCR. So my question is, do you know of any way to put the smoke back in and so I can make it work again?
Find the capacitors that let the smoke out and desolder them and solder them back in.
But that's not putting the smoke back in.
No, it doesn't go back in once it's come out.
Sorry, that's one of the oldest electrician jokes in the book. It's like, you just put that smoke back in, it worked just fine.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
So. And it comes in all kinds of colors. I've seen it dark red.
Most of mine's been blue.
Yeah, I mean, you let the blue smoke out, yeah.
Yeah.
Those Canadian capacitors and their blue smoke. So.
You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK, 963-2976.
Nice. Phones are quiet today.
They are.
Maybe people can't, their power's out.
Yeah. So, yeah, we had a nice little weather event overnight there. And so let's see. I was reading an article about, I guess the FCC is like demanding that Apple put an FM radio chip in their iPhones. Have you heard about that?
I have not heard about that.
Almost all Androids have that built in. It's part of the Qualcomm chip. Yeah, it's just not turned on in software.
Uh-huh. Well, that's...
I think that'd be pretty handy if you're in an event, you know, bigger than the mm-hmm. weather event, but be able to, you know, at least go on the local FM channels and go, hey, what's going on?
Yeah. No, and like I think
safety kind of thing.
Yeah, I think absolutely it should be a safety feature. So, and you got any news there, Modern Marty?
Well, I'm just eagerly waiting for the release of the Pixel 2 on October 4th.
Okay. And how's that going to make your life better?
Well, my Nexus 5 died about 10 days ago, so.
Ah.
Yeah. Well, actually didn't die. The charging port is so loose that now it doesn't charge.
Oh, okay.
And it's costing me probably more. I mean, it's over $100.
You should get one of those proximity chargers.
They didn't do that with that one, sadly.
They didn't?
No,
didn't
they didn't.
Have that feature? Okay.
No. So, the Pixel 2 is coming out in 2 days, so a lot of rumors. And
okay.
They're saying they're doing the squeezable function where you can squeeze it and launch some stuff. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, Gorilla Glass and a lot of
there's a lot of
changes.
Interesting phones coming out in the next 3-4 months.
Sounds like Apple needs to step up its game a little bit.
Yeah, I want to get my hands on one of the new BlackBerry Android phones.
Yeah, so you can have your keyboard again.
I want my keyboard back. I've missed it since my Droid 4.
Okay. So it's got a little slide out, like a actual...
No, it's all one piece. It's kind of like the old BlackBerries where the bottom part's it's like a touch-sensitive mm-hmm. keyboard, so you can do like swipe and some other...
Yeah.
You can do some interesting gesture stuff on the keyboard, and then the other part of it is a big, mm-hmm. beautiful screen. So
got it.
I'll be very curious to get my hands on one of those and see how it looks.
Nice. I never thought that I'd hear the words new BlackBerry. I never thought I'd hear those words uttered.
It does sound like an oxymoron, doesn't it?
It does. Because I remember I was so excited when I got one of those BlackBerry Pearls. That was the biggest piece of junk. It's like I think I had that thing for about 2 weeks. Yeah, I took it. It's the only time I've ever taken it back to the cell phone company and said, "Man, you got to give me my money back. This thing is a piece of junk." It had like a little joystick, like a little roller ball on it. just about drove me nuts trying to, you know, get that down, you know. So,
Louis, one of the interesting things about the Pixel 2 is Google may have unlimited Google Drive space with the phone for 5 years.
Whoa, that's a nice little piece of feature.
Never worry about
mm-hmm.
your pictures again. They're just there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, they don't, but if you upload to Google Photo using their high-quality compression, it's unlimited anyway.
Okay.
So... Uh-oh. Unlimited documents.
Don't rain on his parade, man.
So, but video and documents and all those other things, sure. You can get unlimited for 5 years. That sounds kind of nice. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm kind of intrigued by the, you know, I've been dealing with some, working with some people with some, that have some Chromebooks lately. And I guess what the school system has gone, did the school that you work for, they gone to all Chromebooks now, Matt?
No, we're mixed. We have about 60 Chromebooks, some mm-hmm. Chrome bases, and mm-hmm. then we're just now deploying a couple higher end Chromebooks to the periphery.
So what's the difference between a Chromebook and a Chrome base?
So a Chrome base is like an iMac and a Chrome.
Oh, okay.
So LG and Asus made Chrome bases. But it looks like what's happened is that the Chrome base market wasn't really there, and so you have the Chrome box.
Okay. All right.
So basically a Chrome box is like a Mac Mini.
Okay.
And it's just a little box that has a Chrome computer in it that has a HDMI port and some USBs and those kinds of things in it. And so we're looking at doing monitors with Chrome boxes as opposed to the Chrome bases as being all-in-ones.
Got it. Sounds less expensive. How much does a Chrome box cost?
I think it's between so I think the low end's 150-ish. I haven't looked at those ad nauseum yet.
Yeah.
So I think the low end's in the 150 range, and the upper end's like $700 or $800 mm-hmm. for like an i5, like something that has pretty good specs.
Does that have like a 240 SSD or something? Or?
I'd have to look. I haven't looked at.
Okay.
Usually they are between 16 and 32 gigs, maybe 64. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about the Chrome boxes yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it. Yeah, it really, so like out of the school kids that you work with, would you say, do you get more Macs in for service or out of the fleet of computers that you maintain, you get more Macs in for service or you get more of the Chrome devices in?
Let's hear. So, the Mac ones, we get like three new ones every year, and that's been going on for quite some time. So, you know, we do refurbishments every 3 to 4 years, depending on the machine and the person and all that. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm touching the Macs, you know, every couple of years to do something to them. The Chrome bases of the original 29, we've only managed to destroy three of them, and I think they're 3 or 4 years old at this point.
Okay.
And that's with students using them day in, day out.
Yeah, they seem pretty durable.
Yeah.
It seems like a pretty good solution.
So. Yeah, if you just need to surf the web and check your email online and, you know, watch some YouTube videos and stuff, they are a fantastic option.
And basically it uses the Google Cloud for all storage, right?
Right. And you can use there's a lot of other apps available for it.
Yeah.
I haven't.
So what can you store on a Chromebook? You know, if you want to save something to the hard drive of the Chromebook, can you do that?
Yeah, you can store, a lot of them have SD card readers, so you can plug your plug your SD card in and use it. And then it has about 16 gigs of onboard storage.
Onboard storage, okay.
Depending on which model you get. So not a lot, but you can put a couple files on there. I think there's a file browser you can download and you can view the internal storage and the external storage. And I think it also links out to like Google Drive, so you can kind of use it like that and copy it.
Got it.
Where you need it to go.
So what do you guys think? Do you think this is the wave of the future? You think this is
I want to get a Chromebook. Which ones do you recommend?
You know, all of them that I've run into have been great little machines. We have a whole bunch of Acers, and they've been fine. We got a couple, ThinkPad 13s, Lenovo's recently. Those three machines seem like they're just, great little. The build quality is just excellent on pretty much all of them.
So is it a pretty much a PC-compatible architecture under the hood? Like if you like decide, I don't like this, I want to install Windows on it. How's that going to go for you?
I'm not sure how that would go with the bootloader. That may be an uphill battle. You'd have to definitely, put something bigger than 16 gigs in there to...
Oh, so it really truly is 16 gigs of flash storage. That's it.
Yep,
that's
just a little 16 gig flash card.
Got it.
I think it's a little SATA, like a little mSATA kind of thing.
All right, got it. Have you ever had to replace one of those? Have you ever had one go bad and have to replace it?
No.
No, okay.
You don't use it that much. Basically, all you do, all it's there for, is to, store the operating system, and then once you're up and running, it does most.
See what I'm doing here is I'm getting a bunch of free help from the geeks on Geekspeak because I have a dead Chromebook that I think has a bad
16 gig flash storage device in it. And I'm wondering if I can resurrect it or not. And so I'm just wondering what exactly what's involved. Is it hard soldered in there? Or?
No, it's just it's like a little SATA connector.
Yeah. One screw, take it out.
Pop the bottom case off and it's like one or two screws holding it in there.
Yeah.
Little tiny thing.
Got it. Okay.
So I'm not sure if it's a standard. I think the ones I've taken apart three of them because they just give me a white screen. Mm-hmm. And don't do anything else. I haven't figured out exactly what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the one I've got, it says you need to install the restoration media.
Yeah, so I think
you pop the restoration media in. I've tried it on four different flash drives and one SD card, and it just comes up and says, "Nah, that's not the right one." It does, and you know, I got the restoration media from Amazon's website, you know, or from the Restore app. That you add, it's a Restore plugin that you add into your Google Chrome browser. I don't know if you've been through that or not, but you add this app to it or an extension to it, and then you just put in the model number of the Chromebook, and it says, "Oh, this is the one," and it says, "Stick in your device," and it reformats it and writes it and everything, and comes up and says, "Hey, everything's great, go for it," you know, and then you plug it into the Chromebook, and Chromebook says, "Nah, that's not." That's not me, man.
I wonder if you need to find an older version of the firmware.
Oh, that's an idea. So yeah.
Maybe there's something where it's not. It's trying to find something that's not quite lined up, or maybe there's some.
Yeah.
You know, firmware update that happens on the device, and you have to pick the right version of the device.
All right.
We'll have to look. So.
Yeah. Well, to our listeners out there, if you're having problems with your firmware. Give us a call at 970-963-2976, lest we
continue
end up the show
Chromebook.
with a perfect record of no callers. So
you are listening to Geek Speak on KDNK.
Yep.
Once again, the number is 963-2976 for any tech issues.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you want to call in and talk about your Chromebook experience, we'd be very interested in hearing from you.
Absolutely. Because it is kind of the wave of the future, it seems like.
I've been impressed. You know? They're great little machines for surfing.
I know Apple is struggling to get everybody, you know, to move all their data to the cloud. You know, it's how about you, Modern Marty? Do you use the cloud storage for your
documents? Just for pictures, basically. Yeah, yeah. Not for documents.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Because I've come across a couple instances where apparently Apple made a decision that my client was going to use the iCloud for their documents and stuff. And all of a sudden they clicked on desktop in the Finder and there's nothing there. And they kind of freaked out, you know, and found that you have to actually go to iCloud and then click on desktop. And there it is, you know, so.
Yeah, a lot of people, don't trust the cloud. So, and rightfully so, perhaps.
Why would you say that?
Well,
because it violates the first rule of backup.
And that is?
Backup.
Okay. All
so
right.
if your data doesn't exist in three locations, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, but what if? So, but the idea is that iCloud has a bunch of servers that replicate to each other. So once something of yours goes into the iCloud, chances are it's probably not only in three places; it's probably in about 16 places. It's probably in Bangkok, Thailand. You know,
it might
for all
be
practical purposes.
So, but
not that's a good thing.
But then you still have a single point of failure where if you lose the credentials to your account.
Uh-huh.
It's gone. You know, you're going to have to spend a bunch of time talking to Apple people and hope that they're nice enough to be able for you to be able to retrieve your credentials.
Yeah.
So,
boy, they have really gone overboard with the multi-factor authentication, haven't they? Have you come up against that now? Where you'll be like, have a machine, you don't know what the password to it is, and you go to reset the password and it comes up and it says, "So what password do you use to unlock your iPad mini?" It's the new thing. Have you come across that?
I haven't seen that now.
Oh yeah, no. Wow. They basically start asking you about your other devices now.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've not seen that. Yeah.
That's probably pretty smart. I mean, it allows you to have that additional way to get back in, an additional way for verification. It makes it much more difficult for a person calling into Apple saying, "Hey, I'm so and so, you know, let me into my account."
Yeah. The only thing that was kind of bummed me out though, is that it didn't get to that point until I had already answered my security questions and already like submitted the code for two-factor authentication that came to my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Then it came up and said, "Oh, one more thing." What's the password for your iPad mini?
Yep.
Exactly. By the way.
I'm like, what is this, three-factor authentication?
It's three-factor
authentication. I guess Apple's had some security problems, you know, so I'm guessing, you know, with their behavior.
Well, NIST doesn't recommend that you use text messages as unique identifiers anymore.
But what about iMessages?
Well, those are encrypted, so it's a little harder to get to.
Yeah, that's what Apple always uses. So, yeah, I don't think you can get them to send you an SMS. Yeah. They'd say, what?
Why do you do that?
SM what? So, yep. Well, we got a couple minutes left. 970-963-2976. And I don't know, did they finish up the membership drive around here?
They did.
Yeah.
They had a little party last week.
They weren't
too.
Laying on the lashes for me to like brutalize my listeners.
No, we made our membership drive total, and they had a party.
Wow, and I missed it.
You missed it.
Jeez. That's okay. I've been hanging around with a bunch of theater types, and we've been having a pretty good time.
Okay, that's good to hear.
Yeah, indeed.
Good to hear.
So what else do we got going on out in the universe out there?
Let's see what's happening. What do you think about the potential of Facebook being regulated?
I think that's an awesome idea.
Yeah.
Especially... I don't know. I know that is so un-American, right?
Yeah.
But having a bunch of Russian trolls influence our election in any way. And you know what I pieced together? Did you guys notice about a year ago, there was this whole spate of you would get a friend request from somebody you were always already friends with. You guys don't use Facebook, though, do you?
No, I do. Yeah.
Okay. Some.
Yeah. But you'd get a friend request from somebody that you were already friends with on Facebook. And, you know, at first you're like, wow, I wonder if they accidentally defriended me and now they want to, you know, they want to fix it, you know, or whatever. And so you go ahead and accept it. Well, it has now come to light that those were Russian trolls. They basically cruised around and trolled the, hence the name troll, trolled people who didn't have their Facebook settings locked down and basically took a snapshot of your friend list. And all the people that were your friends, and then did a screenshot of your profile picture, and set up a whole new Facebook account under your name with your picture, and then proceeded to go ahead and send friend requests out to everybody on your friends list. Then put up information about some rally you could go to in your area that had one or another political bent to it.
Right.
You know, and so it's really, you know, pretty ingenious, but the word on the street was that they were hackers and that they were trying to, you know, steal your personal information and stuff. But no, they were only trying to influence our election. That's all they were trying to do. Yeah. So anyway,
it's a good reason to keep your Facebook locked down.
It really is.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of people don't worry about that, but it's, and you know, I've come across problems like, well, I'll talk about it next week.
The problems.
Yes. I'll cogitate on it.
Okay, we have enough weather problems today.
Yeah, definitely.
Another edition of Geek Speak. Once again, thanks to Louie the Computer Guy.
Thank you, Modern Marty.
Matt McBrayer from Roaring Fork Help Desk.
Thanks for running the board.
And I'm Marty Reinierson from Bluebee Interactive. We will see you next week for another edition of Geek Speak.